Cheers, Brendan.
Hi-ho, Silver, Alan.
The Not a Thing podcast is running for episode 192. We're still going on our march to 200. 200 episodes. So many episodes.
numerical episodes.
Yes.
Not actual production episodes.
Right.
Because we're almost already there.
Yeah. I'm sure we are by now. We've done, there've been extras. We'll just say, yeah, we're pretty close to 200. If you would like to be part of our march to 200 or any of the shows after that, because I'm assuming we'll still do shows after that. At least I think so. The Not a Thing podcast is always looking for guests. We were hoping to have one today. We may. We had to do some rescheduling in the name of
in the Norse gods
of drinking. So, 100% valid reason to postpone the show, by the way. So, we'll be looking forward to having our guest next week. Possibly, we'll talk. We'll see what's going on. But in the meantime, we are still going, still marching towards 200. We're hoping to do some fun shows in between now and then, and probably something fun for 200. If you'd like to be part of that, feel free to let us know. Tweet at us, Facebook us, visit our website, and say hi to the HAL 900 for us, and we'll put it together. It'll be a thing. It'll be great.
Because we don't say hi to it. We just let that thing roll.
No, because it's a robot. We don't say hi to robots, because fuck those guys.
Yes! This is why we do a show.
And so speaking of that specifically, robots, we are going to start with our old friends from Boston Dynamics. I guess they're still fine. I remember a while ago they were bought by Google and then or Alphabet. I can't remember what the name of the company was at that point. And after some amount of time, they were spun back off. They were sold back off, and I think Alphabet and Google just they say they couldn't find a way to really work it into whatever they were doing, which I think is probably, you know, forward looking on their part, because clearly what Boston Dynamics is trying to do is kill us all, because they are releasing now the Spot Mini. Which I don't know if they ever named their original kind of crazy robot dog things.
It's a Wildcat.
Wildcat?
I believe is what it's called.
Oh, okay. Well, the Spot Mini is a smaller version of it. The promo video that they have shows it able to kind of scrunch down and walk underneath the full-size Wildcat. And it walks around the house and it can, you know, avoid things and negotiate corners and everything else. And the video takes a very, very disturbing turn because they mount what amounts to an arm on the back of the little robot dog that kind of folds in half so it can essentially double its length by extending out this arm that articulates out of the back of the robot, and there's a little grabber on the end, and somebody at Boston Dynamics put googly eyes on this grabber, so it just looks like this giraffe neck thing that kind of springs out of the top of the dog and has this just very creepy looking face. And the first time you see it, they're doing this kind of demo where the grabber stays in place and then the rest of the body moves around. It's disturbing as all hell. Like, this should not exist. So yes, Boston Dynamics is apparently alive and well and still creating very, very deeply creepy robots that are now even smaller and have arms that can reach twice their length. Plus, this means it can right itself if it falls over. And they show it climbing stairs like it's nothing. Yeah. Real bad. Continues to be not a thing.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, I don't approve of any of this.
Yeah, yeah. Boston Dynamics, amazingly frightening robots. We'll link it in an even more, like, more evidence that they are, you know, a horrible company. Their video autoplays when you visit this website. So that's still not a thing, by the way. Autoplaying with sound, just don't do it. But yes, the video autoplays and you'll see it. Within a minute, you'll be, you know, wanting to, you know, throw your computer out the window and renounce all technology. Hopefully you'll still listen to our show. I don't know how that will work in the no technology Luddite future, you know, we'll maybe still be recording, maybe. Kind of moving from very frightening robots to very frightening flying things. The Air Force has created an artificial intelligence that they call Alpha. Alpha, because it's all caps. I don't know if it actually stands for anything or if it is just them screaming, but It was created as a training program, so pilots could fly against an artificial pilot in simulation. And this is not new. Simulated pilots have been around for probably a really long time. If you've ever played any video games, it's essentially that you're just flying against a simulated aircraft and pilot that has reaction time and decisions and logic about when and how to attack and evade and things like that. This version of it, however, was created in a slightly different way. It was created using what they're calling genetic algorithms. So what they mean is that they would program it with a set of algorithms. They'd have it fly against other simulated aircraft, and they would pick the ones that consistently won. So there's that genetic kind of aspect of it. So it would vary certain things, like the time it took to decide if it could hit a target or not, or the time it took to decide if it could maneuver a turn in addition to turn towards a target while trying to turn away from a missile. So it would take all of those factors and they would run it in a number of simulations and then pick the kind of a survival of the fittest kind of algorithm. And when they finally decided to test it against people, not only did it win, I think it was 100% of the time in the number of tries that they had against human pilots, all in virtual simulations, it would also win even when they handicapped it. They gave it, a slower plane. They gave it worse sensors. They gave it a lower threshold for G-forces, so it wouldn't be able to turn as fast or do very, acrobatic maneuvers, and it still won 100% of the time. Very disturbing, to say the least. Most of all because it only makes me think of that really, really, really terrible movie, Stealth, which is really not a thing. That movie should not have existed.
I skipped it entirely. Yes, I was able to resist the appeal of Jamie Foxx and Jessica Biel. My fear of AI overruled all that.
Right. They're still using this in training. It's still a training aid, though I don't think they they have any concrete plans to build an AI into an actual aircraft, but it's certainly within the realm of possibility, given that they're already actual aircraft that are run remotely. There's no reason that those couldn't be run by an AI at least part of the time. It's a little disturbing that they taught it how to dogfight. and taught it, you know, very, very well, apparently. It's the kind of thing where hopefully it's a thing that can be beaten by people. They're still testing. There's still time.
Yeah, just don't start mixing these with the robots.
Right. Right, let's not have it deploy robot dogs from itself as it is flying. I think there's a lot of bad synergies that can come from this.
The end is nigh.
Well, taking AI and using it for good is possible. So we're going to leave, hopefully, the our thoughts of AI behind us in the thought that it's out to kill us or just really freak us out with its googly eyes. And instead, it might be able to save us from parking tickets. So a programmer from, I believe it's Australia, got something like 30 parking tickets in, you know, a really short amount of time. And he was amazingly frustrated. And what he did, he took that frustration and instead of doing something really bad with it, he did something really good with it. And he figured out that a lot of the parking infractions can be fought in court or appealed, and that appeal process is pretty standard. It's you know, as a function of bureaucracy, there's a lot of rules that are around things, and just because of that, it made kind of navigating those rules be something that could be programmatically done. So what he did was he wrote a chatbot AI that would, when you got a parking ticket, you would run this app and then it would ask you in natural language a bunch of questions about the situation and the you know, time of day and, you know, how visible the signs were and all of that kind of stuff. And then using knowledge of the rules and regulations that it can be programmed with, it would set up your appeal process. So it would write out all of the you know, the documentation you would need to kind of fight it in court, and then it would spit that back to you. So you wouldn't have to do that research. It would have all of that there. And I think there was a, it's been released in the UK and in New York. They're planning to release it in Seattle, and it's already saved some large number or it's already, allowed people to fight, you know, a fair number of tickets. It's only been a few months since it's been around. The app is called Do Not Pay. I wonder.
Very simple, straight to the point.
Yeah, I wonder if it's free. But I think it's great in that this exists and that the author of the chatbot is looking into expanding its use to a bunch of other systems regarding medical information and what to do in certain emergency situations, and helping people navigate the processes of different things like filing for taxes or signing up for government assistance or a lot of things where there is just that like large amount of bureaucracy. And I think that's great. I think the underlying problem of it, of there being like this huge amount of bureaucracy that you have to wade through that you can't, no one person can possibly keep in their head all of the kind of gotchas and and things and landmines in the legal system that are there. I think that's also a problem that probably has to get fixed, but it's nice to have someone kind of working for the consumer, for the user, for the person that has to navigate that. So it's nice to see that exists. I know there's been a number of programs, even recently, there was an initiative called Code for America, and I think there was even a local initiative called Code for San Jose or Code for Silicon Valley, where it asked people who were in engineering and technology fields to apply that thinking towards solving essentially government bureaucracy and problems, and making it more easy for regular people to kind of work with without a lawyer, without a without a lot of legal assistance. And I think that's admirable, but again, you know, it is fixing the symptom and not necessarily the problem in a lot of those cases. But, you know, small steps. We're hoping for small steps. Another small step, which actually might be a big step, is California is reconsidering what they're calling the Adult Use of Marijuana Act, which is probably what you think it is. It got enough signatures to be on the November ballot that California may look to legalize recreational marijuana. Finally.
I think it's going to happen this time.
Yeah, the article pointed out that it was tried in 2012. Is that right?
2010.
And it failed by 7%. 2010 was early. It was certainly before Washington and Colorado. It was before any of the states had really done that. And sort of, again, California lagging just a little bit in terms of the rest of the country. We weren't first for gay marriage, and then we're like, it's fine, yeah, no, we're totally on board. So there's this as well. We'll see how that works. An interesting bit about this is that there are a number of interests to legalize marijuana for recreational use. You know, a number of individuals, one of whom apparently is Sean Parker, who the article points out as former Facebook president. I don't think of Sean Parker as former Facebook president. I think of him as that Napster guy. but maybe that's just me. I think my time horizon is maybe longer than some folks in the Valley. But who knows? That might pass. It's certainly gotten a lot more friendly, you know, from kind of by multiple states.
Well, you're seeing all the revenue that's being brought in Colorado, and right. You have a much larger population in California. I mean, just the tax revenue alone, I think, is worth it. Also, reducing strain on the criminal justice system would be great.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people getting hit for that.
Well, it's still a crime at the federal level is the worrying thing. That's not really.
But they're changing the scheduling on it.
Are they really?
I believe they are.
Okay, I haven't read that one yet, but that would be interesting. We've talked about that in the past too. It's a I always do this wrong because I always go the wrong way. It's like one.
Schedule one is the highest.
Right. So it's a Schedule One drug, which means it has absolutely no use or no positive use. So it is that's how illegal it is. Whereas cocaine is not in Schedule One because cocaine is used for medical purposes. So it's one of those things where the scheduling of it doesn't really match up with kind of the understanding of a lot of the states, and then that has to get worked out. So hopefully a safe and sane kind of approach to that is taken, kind of figuring out that, you know, there is actually data now about how it works and is distributed and the changes that it can have on a community. It'd be interesting to have legislation based on data. Hooray.
I think we always side with data as much as possible.
Right. Data good.
Unless data. That data is saying that robots can do all the things that we're not making them do, in which case that is not a thing.
We reserve the right to moderate said data. Mostly because it's our show.
We moderate all.
Although we'd like to take suggestions. If you have any thoughts about what's a thing or what's not a thing, feel free to let us know. We get some of those on our Facebook page and on Twitter very occasionally. It'd be fun to field some of those via the internet. Seeing as we use it a lot, it'd be great. Please join us on the internet. Let us know what you think's a thing or not. If you'd like to spend a whole show talking about your thing, it'd be great. That's also fun. We like to have guests on the show. Like I said, we're hoping to have a guest soon. It's a topic that we've been kind of saving for a couple weeks. There have been just a few stories that have run into it, we're hoping to have a good one related around that. We're hoping to have a couple more guests. It's still kind of fun and exciting. I hope you think so too. Please continue to listen and tell your friends and others to listen to our show. We don't, you know, the enemy of you is not necessarily our enemy either. So would that be bad if we want everyone to listen to the show? We're trying to be inclusive. Is really what it is. We don't want you to have enemies necessarily. Be all our friends and listen to our show. Or mostly just listen to our show. You don't have to be our friend to listen to the show.
No.
what you might want to do though is catch up on kind of some TV and movies that we talk about, because we do talk about those on the show. We usually have the, you know, kind of spoiler land kind of disclaimer when we go there. But that's becoming harder and harder to negotiate more recently. And I'm not going to spoiler land yet. But what I am talking about is a story that we found about a Chrome extension. So it's a Chrome browser extension, which when coupled with streaming media websites like YouTube or Vimeo or even Netflix or Amazon Prime, what it will do is it will allow you to speed up or slow down. So you can change the rate of the video and ideally keep the audio at a listenable level. And this is something that has existed for podcasts for a little while. It's been built into the iTunes player, anyway, the iOS player, that you can speed up a podcast or even slow it down. And so this is just extending it to video sources. And this article goes to great length about how the author has switched to watching a lot of TV at 150% of speed. And kind of initially it talks about it as there's too much to watch. And so in order to watch more TV rather than dedicate more time to it, the author decides to speed up the watching of TV, and thus more TV is watched in the same amount of time.
That's robbing it of all its artistry. This isn't just informational.
Yeah, it's really odd for me because I have a lot of reservations for this on a lot of levels. I think primarily your thought about it is the same as mine, which is that the timing of the unfolding of whatever the narrative is, or even just the timing of the shots, just how it reaches your eyeballs, is something that's crafted. That's something that is often really pored over in the direction process, and in especially the editing process, and making that kind of fit or rejiggering that to fit your time schedule, so you can watch an episode in the amount of a commute time. I think it does kind of assume that you know better than the creators of that art, and I'm conflicted about that too, because I think of stuff like not the Phantom Edit, but the other Star Wars initiative around making the releasing the Star Wars films, or the original trilogy of Star Wars films, as they existed when they were released by to theaters. We talk about how there is some amount of, like, when you release something into the world, you're actually releasing it to the world, so the world can already do whatever it wants with it, and so you're giving away some of that control. And I do believe that, but I also think that choosing to watch a show at a faster pace, or changing its pace, really really does lose something about the artistic intent. Now, if you're watching a show because you're just catching up on episodes and it's kind of throwaway anyway, I think you can make that choice, and that's sort of fine. It is fine. I mean, you can watch TV however you want. But you are losing. I think you have to recognize at some level you're losing the fidelity of what it was initially created for.
You're losing the performances.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's great if you're trying to get informational text.
Sure.
That makes sense to try and speed it up. Just get through it.
Yeah.
Put it in your head. But there's so many layers to television and movies,
mm-hmm.
that I think you lose trying to do it this way.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, the article is fairly deep, and it goes into a bit about recognition of words per minute and syllables per minute, and the ability of your mind to kind of understand things at a higher rate of speed, and how your mind will make allowances to be able to do that. So there's some amount of plasticity in being able to watch TV at a higher rate. And then, interestingly, the author goes kind of walks some of that back and says that once he has been in that mode for a while, watching TV at quote unquote regular pace feels exceptionally slow to him, which I think is sad, because that's the speed it was made to be experienced at. But also, I know that there's a parallel in speed reading as well. I don't know if you remember the Sprinkle app that came out a while ago, where what it does is it's a speed reading app where it shows one word at a time, and they would pick the midpoint of the word, and that is kind of where it would show up. So words don't scroll left to right or however it would scroll. They would just appear, and the middle of the word would always appear roughly in the same position, so you wouldn't have to move your eyes left and right. It would just be word, and it would appear very quickly. And a lot of demonstrations were done to show that you could comprehend texts that were done very, very fast, much faster than if you were doing the kind of speed reading that I was taught, which was you essentially hold your finger on the line and slide it along as you go, as fast as you can. And the sprinkle kind of method was very quick. And I know that I could definitely read much faster than I thought, but they've shown, and I know I recognize this from just trying it for a while, that while your brain can comprehend it, you don't retain it necessarily. So even using it for an informational point of view to kind of cram things into your head as fast as possible, it doesn't necessarily work better than reading something. You still have to read for retention versus just straight up comprehension, which I thought was interesting. And I think it would also apply to watching something, because when you're watching something, it isn't just the words and images. There's a lot more layers and interplay about how it occurs. There's context, there's lighting, there's camera movement, there's cuts, there's music. There's so many more things that I can only assume that you know, with so many more things coming on, not just individual words coming up, that your brain has to make a lot more adjustments to change how that experience works. So I don't think I even listen to podcasts sped up. Do you? Have you ever done that?
Only ours.
I guess that's fair. I mean, we've lived it. We don't need to hear it that one in real time.
No, I don't do that with other ones.
I have tried to listen to podcasts at a higher speed, but I find it distracting. That may be just because I listen to a lot of podcasts while I'm driving, and the input speed becomes overwhelming pretty quickly. You know, I'm already, you know, yelling at other cars to get out of my lane. I don't need to be doing that and trying to comprehend podcasts faster. but again, I think that is that is something that I don't think. I mean, I certainly don't think it should be, you know, blocked or disallowed. I just think that. Again, if people are doing that, they have to recognize that they're butchering the creator's work in that case. So from that point of view, it's not a thing. kind of moving from consumption of things to actually the gathering of that video. We have an interesting story about cameras, and this isn't cameras for TV necessarily. This is cameras primarily for medical use. And what is being done is that they figured out a way to 3D print a compound lens. So it's a three component lens, completely 3D printed, that is really tiny. It's something like 100 microns across. Which means that they can stick it in the point of a syringe, and then have a fiber optic cable that leads back to a more kind of robust camera that so you can image things anywhere where you can put that syringe. So what that means is doing any kind of internal, you know, imaging, any kind of scope work that needs to be done internal to the body, even in the brain, can be done anywhere where you can stick a needle. So from that point of view, from a medical imaging point of view, that's pretty intense. You know, most scope things are, they're much less invasive than they certainly could be, but they're still pretty invasive given that, you know, a lot of the times it needs to be a camera that can be, you know, turned or moved around. And so there's all of the motors and mechanics that have to deal with that, that take up the camera body. In this case, the camera body and lens, like I said, fits within a syringe. So again, anywhere they can stick a syringe, they can look. So it's pretty wild. It's also really worrisome from a like, how small can they make cameras now? So 100 microns, that's a tenth of a millimeter. That's real tiny. There's no examples, unfortunately, in the link that we have about what the imaging quality is. I can only imagine that the visual fidelity is pretty low, but you never know. And if TV is any indication, you can always magnify and enhance and it looks fine. So because that's a thing. we're gonna stick with really, really tiny things, and with stuff that sticks, actually. I still find this the premise hilarious for this one, but it's really interesting. It's about getting all the shampoo out of your shampoo bottle, and that is actually the premise for this. So what some scientists at, I believe, a university in Ohio are looking at is that shampoo and soap and other surfactants are made with a really low surface tension. And what they do is when they're mixed with water, they make that water, they dilute the water in such a way that it makes it slick and it doesn't stick to stuff. So that's why you clean stuff with shampoos and soap. It's because when it's mixed with water, it will, you know, it wants to stick less to itself and to other things. The problem is when it's in its kind of base state, it tends to not stick to itself, but it tends to stick to other things like the containers that they're in. So what the premise was that if they could reduce the amount of product that stays in those bottles, you can potentially save the, you know, companies because they're much more efficient about getting stuff out of the bottles, blah, blah, blah. the way that they approached this was, I think, really interesting, or rather the fact that they saw this as a problem to solve was really interesting, but then the way they approached it was even more interesting, at least to me, was that they used nanoparticles to do it. So what they do is they make Y-shaped nanoparticles that they can deposit on the inside of the bottles, and what those do is they're small enough that individual air molecules will fit in between those shapes and essentially make a very, very, very thin layer of air that the shampoo or soap floats on in the bottle. So it's never actually touching the bottle itself, so it's not sticking to it. So in the examples that they show, they deposit the shampoo on an untreated surface and you see how much it sticks, and then you do it on the treated surface and it falls right off. It's I think it's sound science. I am looking forward to the day that they put those coatings on windshields and windows and shower doors and just so many other things that that never seem to get clean, or stay clean or stay fog free. So hooray for science. Science marches on, even in kind of interesting and odd little ways, not necessarily in world dominating robotic ways.
Shampoo yes, robots no.
it's really a simple kind of proposition from the Not a Thing podcast is what this show is telling you. So that will probably do it for this week. So like I said earlier, like we've said before, please tweet about us, Facebook us, visit our website. Let us know what you think about the show, what things are things, what things are not things, and generally keep listening. We're continuing to record every week. It's still free and fun every week. We would love a sponsor, hashtag Moon Tent, because that would be cool. It would be a thing. But we really just love the interaction. We love hearing about when people are listening to the show. We love having guests on the show. So please join us. And yeah, it'll be a fun time. So Brennan, I will talk to you next week.
Till next time, Alan.